It's time to play big on Moto Social Casino, America's hottest free-to-play social casino experience. Moto.us has live casino games. It's time! Play big, win bigger on Moto.us today.
Moto is a social casino, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Visit Moto.us for more details.
It's time!
Moto.us.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch Bonnie plants are on sale through May 18th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time to play big on Moto Social Casino, America's hottest free-to-play social casino experience. Moto.us has live casino games. It's time! Play big, win bigger on Moto.us today.
Moto is a social casino, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Visit Moto.us for more details.
It's time!
Moto.us.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
I hope you can nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Good afternoon,
Your Honor.
Oh, all right, Mr. Brennan, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, sir. Could you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Yes, my name is Paul Gallagher.
For the court reporter, would you mind spelling your last name?
G-A-L-L-A-G-H-E-R.
Mr. Gallagher, do you presently work?
I'm, as a police officer, I'm retired.
When did you retire?
August 31st, 2024.
When you retired, what department were you working for?
The Canton Police Department.
How many years had you worked for the Canton Police Department upon your retirement?
I was credited with 32 years, 8 months of service.
Did you have a particular rank when you retired?
Yes, I was a lieutenant.
I want to go back to the beginning of your law enforcement career and share your background with the jury. When did you begin your career in law enforcement?
I became a permanent intermittent police officer in Canton in 1992. What a permanent intermittent police officer is, it's basically a part-time police officer. You're required to attend a 16-week part-time academy. Your duties include regular patrol duties that a regular police officer would do, but you're only utilized during special events, short staffing, and you're allowed to work paid traffic details.
Did that status change at some point?
It did in 1994,
were you a patrolman?
Yes, and that required me to attend a full-time 18-week police academy.
In addition to the police academy, did you continue your training over the years?
Yes, I did.
Can you share with the jury some of the training that you would attend over the years?
Oh, sure. So I did constitutional law. I did interview and interrogation, terrorism, international terrorism, domestic terrorism, domestic violence, buccal swabbing, and DEA basic narcotics course. And last duties were I did background checks, so I attended background training, and I did internal affairs.
Before I talk a little bit more about your experience over the years and your progress through the Canton Police Department, I'd like you to share with us generally and briefly the structure of the Canton Police Department. The Canton Police Department, how big is it? How many officers are typically employed by Canton at the same time?
We would like to have 45, but unfortunately, we're short-staffed at this time.
At the Canton Police Department, is there different ranks?
There is.
And what are they?
They are patrol, sergeant, detective sergeant, lieutenant, deputy chief, and chief.
Given the size of Canton, is it a small department or a typically large department for that size?
I would say it's a medium-sized department.
Is Canton, do you receive traffic from other areas nearby?
We do.
Is Boston part of the crossroad through Canton at times?
It is. Route 138 runs from Boston, and it goes all the way down to the South Shore through Brockton, Taunton, et cetera.
Other cities or towns nearby that bring traffic through Canton as far as law enforcement is concerned?
They do, and other states. 95 runs through Canton as well and brings up traffic from Rhode Island.
For a relatively small town, is Canton a busy police department given all the crossroads and intersections?
It can be very busy at times.
You mentioned in Canton that there are different ranks. You started as a patrol officer.
Yes.
Did that change at some point?
It did.
When?
July of 2001, I became a detective.
Did you have any particular or special training to become a detective?
I started attending how to dust for fingerprints. My focus was narcotics. I had several narcotics classes.
Did you engage in those type of investigations on behalf of Canton?
I did.
Did you work with other agencies?
I did. In 2005, I started working with the Drug Enforcement Administration. In 2006, I was assigned as a task force officer for the DEA, initially out of Worcester Tactical Diversion Squad, which their mission goal was to eradicate OxyContin and oxycodone distribution at that time. It was during our oxycodone phase. In 2008, I was moved to Boston Division, and there we focused on all narcotics, not just oxycodone, heroin, cocaine, et cetera.
How many years did you spend as a detective before you received your next promotion?
Approximately 15 years.
What happened next in your career as far as progress?
I took the sergeant's exam, and I became a sergeant.
In order to become a sergeant, do you have to pass an exam?
An exam and an assessment, yes.
Is that enough to become a sergeant, or is there another process you have to go through?
That's where they rank you after the exam and the assessment.
What year did you say you became a sergeant?
I became a sergeant in 2017.
Was that your first supervisory position?
Not actually. I also worked as an officer in charge, which you're not technically a sergeant, but when there's no sergeant to fill the shift, they'll use experienced officers to work as a sergeant, and you receive sergeant's pay.
How long did you work as a sergeant for at the Canton Police Department?
I worked as a sergeant for 1 year till 2018, and I was promoted to detective sergeant.
As a sergeant, did your duties change or expand from that of detective?
I was still assigned to the Drug Enforcement Administration at that time.
And you just shared a year later you were promoted to lieutenant. Did you have to take and pass an exam for that?
That was detective sergeant, and I did not have to pass a test for that.
Did your duties and responsibilities expand when you became lieutenant?
Yes, I was brought out of the DEA to work in Canton specifically.
Were there other lieutenants on the Canton Police Department when you worked as a lieutenant?
I became a lieutenant in 2021. At the time, there was three other lieutenants.
Were there any other officers above lieutenant at that point?
There was a deputy chief and a chief.
In 2022, January, were you a lieutenant?
I was.
Your duties and responsibilities, do they include actually going to scenes, or was it purely supervisory?
It was supervisory, but we were expected to respond to scenes.
What do you mean by that?
Our chief expected a supervisor on scene at all times, at all scenes.
Even if there was a ranking supervisor, like a sergeant, were you still, as a lieutenant, expected to go to scenes?
Oh, yes.
Did you do that often?
Yes.
I want you to take us to January 29th, 2022. Were you working the overnight shift from January 28, 2022 into January 29, 2022?
I was the outgoing lieutenant. I did not work into the 29th. I was the last lieutenant to work on the 28th.
In the early morning hours around 6 a.m., were you on shift or off shift?
I was off shift.
Were you planning on working that morning?
I was planning on working later that day, yes.
Do you remember what the weather was like that early morning?
Yes, there was a nor'easter, which was snow, wind.
Did anything interrupt your plan of working later that day?
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
Shortly after 6 a.m., I received a call from Sergeant Sean Good of the Canton Police Department.
After you received the call from Sergeant Sean Good, were you informed about a situation?
I was.
Were you told any basic details of where and what?
Yes.
Without sharing the actual conversation, where was this situation taking place?
I misunderstood the situation. I thought it was on Meadows Ave in Canton. I later found out through dispatch that it was actually Fairview Road.
When you heard that there was a situation in Canton, did you decide to change your plans about when you would come in?
Yes, I responded.
Why did you respond?
That's the expectation our chief had for us.
When you go into work, do you use a police cruiser or do you use your personal vehicle?
On this particular day, I used a personal vehicle because of the weather.
Was that different than typical?
Yes.
And why would you use a personal vehicle instead of a police cruiser?
It was larger. It was four-wheel drive. It was the only way I probably would have got there to the scene.
After you received the call about a situation, tell us what you did.
I loaded up the car with a tent, and I drove to the Canton Police Department, and I got some winter gear from the office, and I got on the radio and advised Sergeant Sean Good, who was at the scene on Fairview, that all officers were held to further notice.
What does that mean?
They weren't going to be going home at their end of the shift until they were relieved by another supervisor.
Why did you take a tent with you?
Because of the snow. The way the call was described to me was a person possibly not breathing. And if it was an unattended death, I wanted to be able to cover the person.
Why?
Respect.
That tent was a tent from your home, a personal tent?
It was. It was an 8x8 pop-up tent.
You went to the Canton Police Department first before you went to the scene?
I did.
Why did you go to the Canton Police Department first?
I had some winter gear there, including a reflective jacket that I thought would be helpful, given it was dark out. Visibility was very bad.
When you got to the Canton Police Department, did you learn anything from any of your colleagues while at the police department?
The only one colleague at the police department at that time was Officer Kelly Dever.
Okay. After you got your gear at the Canton Police Department, did you head towards Fairview?
I did.
Other than the general description that you had heard, did you know anything about what was going on there?
Just that a gentleman was found unconscious in the snow, possibly not breathing.
You mentioned the term unintended death. What does that mean?
An unintended death is a death where someone dies alone. And you don't know the reason. It doesn't mean there's foul play. In fact, 99% of the time, it's natural causes.
Is there a process for the Canton Police Department when they learn of any death, unintended or not? Is there a process you need to follow?
Yes, there is.
And what is that process?
That's to call the Norfolk County DA's office, their CPAC unit, Crime Prevention and Control. They have jurisdictions over deaths and unintended deaths.
You mentioned a CPAC unit. What type of officers or law enforcement is the CPAC unit?
It's manned by the Massachusetts State Police.
Are you required by statute to contact CPAC or the Massachusetts State Police, even if it's an unintended death?
Yes.
Did you follow that process?
Sergeant Lank followed that process.
Is that one of the officers who worked under you?
Yes, that is correct.
Did you know if Sergeant Lank was at the scene when you were leaving Canton, or did you learn at some point when you got there whether Sergeant Lank was at Fairview?
When I got there, I saw the black Toyota Tundra, which is operated by our detectives there, and then I saw him.
When Canton Police Department first contacted the Massachusetts State Police, or the CPAC unit, about the information. Do you have an understanding whether or not the Massachusetts State Police were going to respond or not?
They were not responding.
So when you got to Fairview Road, were there any other law enforcement officers other than Canton police officers?
No, there was not.
When you appeared at Fairview Road or arrived, were you the superior officer on the scene?
I was. I was the highest ranking officer.
As you're pulling up to Fairview that morning, what's the first thing you see when you get there?
As I pull up, I see the last of the fire apparatus pulling away. I get out of the vehicle. The first one I encountered was Sergeant Sean Good, who was the shift supervisor.
Did you see any other of your officers there?
I did. I saw Lieutenant Lank further down, and further down I saw two other cruisers, which ended up being Officer Mullaney and Officer Sarif.
Did any of the cruisers or vehicles have lights on?
They did.
Did you hear any sirens?
No, there wouldn't be any sirens.
Why wouldn't there be?
Sirens are used to move traffic. There was no traffic. It was a blizzard. There were no cars on the road. You might see an occasional plow.
Did you ever learn the general area where the person was found?
Yes.
At that time, did you know who the person was?
I did. I knew him by name, yes.
Did someone inform you of who the person was?
Sergeant Sean Good did, yes.
Okay. And who was the person that you learned was on the ground?
John O'Keefe.
Had you known John O'Keefe?
I knew of John O'Keefe. I had never met John O'Keefe.
When you first arrived at Fairview, was Mr. O'Keefe still on the ground?
He was not.
Was he at the scene?
He was not.
So when you got to the scene at Fairview, Mr. O'Keefe was already gone?
Yes, he had been transported to the hospital.
So did you ever firsthand see exactly where Mr. O'Keefe was lying when he was found?
I did not.
Did anybody point out to you the general area?
Yes.
Did you have a chance at that point to, well, obviously you didn't have a chance to examine or look at Mr. O'Keefe. Did you have a chance to look in the general area where you were told he was found?
I did.
Tell us a little bit more about the weather now that you're standing outside Fairview Road. What's the visibility like? What's the temperature like? What are the conditions like?
So it was terrible. It was blizzard-like. The wind would blow in your face. It would change directions. The snow was an icy snow. In the wind, you had to actually talk loud to be heard, somebody right next to you. And it was your typical New England blizzard, basically.
At this point, did you have any position as you assessed the area, whether this was a criminal investigation?
Well, we had no crime at that time.
When you were there, were you looking for anything?
Yes, I was examining the scene.
Okay. At that point, did you have any reason to start a criminal investigation?
Not at that time, no.
When you learned that Mr. O'Keefe was found outside, did you go look at the particular area?
Yes.
Can you describe the area that was shown to you where Mr. O'Keefe was found?
Sure. It was on the left side of the property of 34 Fairview. You could see where first responders and witnesses and police officers had walked up to the area. It was by a flagpole on the property line of number 32 Fairview.
What was the lighting condition at that point in that area?
It was dark. It was sun was coming up, but due to the weather and the cloud cover and the snow, its visibility still was not great.
Were the law enforcement vehicles providing any light for the area?
No.
How about the house? Was there any bright lights coming out of the house illuminating that area?
I didn't see any lights, window lights on. There may have been an exterior, the door light at one or two houses.
In addition to the law enforcement officers that were there, did you see any civilians when you got there?
No, there were no civilians there.
While you were outside looking at the area, did any civilians ever come out?
No, not at all.
Any civilians ever come out of 34 Fairview?
No.
How about next door, 32 Fairview? Did you ever see any civilians come out of that address?
Nobody ever came out of the house.
Across the street, is there homes across the street from 34 Fairview?
There is.
Did you see anybody come out of either one of those houses?
Did not see anybody come out of those houses.
When you were outside and you were shown the area where you were told Mr. O'Keefe was found, did you try to do anything regarding that area to identify the area itself?
I'm sorry, can you ask that again?
Yes. The area where you were told Mr. O'Keefe was found, did you try to do anything around that area to identify the area?
Well, it was marked out with crime scene tape at that time, and what I saw was pink blood, and it was in a circular pattern.
Was the crime scene tape holding up at all?
No, it was not. It was blowing wildly in the wind, and at one point, it was actually blowing in. It was triangular, and it was actually blowing into the crime scene.
Was the tape helping at all?
No, it was not.
Was there any use putting a tent up at that point?
No, there wasn't, not due to the high winds.
Did you learn whether any of the officers had, at any point before you got there, gone into Fairview Road?
Yes.
Who did you learn went into Fairview Road?
Both Sergeant Good and Detective Sergeant Lake went into Fairview Road.
Did you know how long they were inside for?
Objection. Oh, did you know that?
I did not.
At that point, did you go and speak to anybody in any of the nearby homes?
I did not.
When you were at this scene and you saw what was happening in the weather, did you make a decision to do anything?
Yes.
What did you decide you were going to do?
Since the state police were not responding, I decided to process the area where Mr. O'Keefe was found and try to find out why he had the medical episode he was having.
If you understood this to be a medical episode, and at that point you didn't have any information it was a crime scene, why were you taking the time and effort to process the scene under these conditions?
Because that's what we do. Even the hospital, there could be a reason that there's obviously a reason he's there. I think we had a duty and obligation to check around where he was found and see if there was any explanation to what caused his medical condition.
Did you focus on a particular area when you decided to look around?
I did.
What area were you going to look at?
Where it was pointed out he was found and where the blood pattern was.
Were you thinking about looking in any other areas around that?
Not at that time.
Why not?
We didn't have any reason to. We only had the area where he was found.
And at that point, did you have any idea what caused his injuries?
We had none.
At this point, when you were pointed or you're looking at the area where Mr. O'Keefe was found, was the area getting covered up at all?
Yes, it was.
With what?
Snow.
How quickly?
Very quickly. I believe it was forecast that it had come down to 1 to 2 inches an hour, if I recall.
Did you have any idea how hard the ground was at that point?
It was frozen.
Objection. No, did you have any idea?
It was frozen.
Objection.
I'll allow it.
How deep was the snow covering that frozen ground?
Approximately 4 inches at that time.
When you wanted to look around the area, did you consider using a rake or a shovel?
I did.
And did you?
I did not.
Why didn't you use a shovel at that point?
I was afraid I would miss something or possibly break something.
What could you break with a shovel?
Anything, glass or anything of that nature.
What was your decision about how you would search that area? What did you want to see?
I wanted to see anything that was possible, whether it was any type of weapon or any type of medical bottle or any reason that he could have come to where he was.
Did you think of a way that you could look below the top of the snow without unresting the scene?
Yes, I did.
And what did you conclude?
Because of the blood, the pink spots, I thought might be blood. I thought a leaf blower would be the best method because I have seen it used and to remove light layers of snow, and it can be controlled.
And after having seen that before, making that decision, what was the benefit of a leaf blower over a shovel?
I wasn't going to miss anything with a leaf blower. Much better control.
And control, tell us what your intention, what was your hope with the leaf blower?
To clear the area controlled, slowly, so any potential evidence of what happened to Mr. O'Keefe wouldn't be lost.
Did you have a leaf blower with you?
Did not.
So what did you do?
Sergeant Good volunteered to go get the leaf blower, get a leaf blower.
Did you remain at the scene?
I did.
And during this time, are you still have no information that it's a crime scene?
We had no information on a crime at that time.
Did Sergeant Good come back with the leaf blower?
He did.
Did you try to get any other items to help you?
Not that I recall.
Okay. When Sergeant Good came back with the leaf blower, did you use it?
I did.
Was it successful?
Very.
Tell us what you did.
I started with low speed and began whisking away the snow. And then I saw how it was uncovering. Those pink spots were becoming brighter red. So I verified it was frozen or coagulated blood at that time. And so out of the abundance of caution, I decided that that was something we may want to collect.
Why did you want to collect that?
Just out of abundance of caution, DNA. I expected it to be John's DNA.
And I
wasn't going to get a second chance at it. It was either collect it or never have it.
Were you making quick decisions under these circumstances?
Yes.
Did you ask somebody to get a container to put the coagulated blood in?
I ended up getting the containers.
Where did you get them from?
I got them from Lieutenant Kelleher, who lived in the neighborhood.
Did Lieutenant Kelleher ever come over to the scene?
He did not.
Did he work for the Canton Police Department?
He did.
Why didn't he come over to the scene with you?
Because he originally thought the scene was at 32.
Did you ask him to come over to the scene to help you?
No.
Did you expect him to come over to help you?
No.
Did you prefer he not?
Correct.
So when you get the containers, were they plastic cups?
Yes, they were red Solo cups.
And what was the purpose of using the red Solo cups?
They were plastic. They weren't going to leak. They weren't going to get soggy. They were large. I needed a small sample. My thought was because it was frozen or coagulated that we could collect it, transport it, and transfer it to the crime lab who could extract the DNA however they saw best fit.
Does sometimes the crime lab test evidence and sometimes not?
Of course, yes.
Is that your decision?
No.
You were telling us about the leaf blower. Does it serve to excavate the area?
It did.
Did you begin that process?
I did.
And when you did that, did you try to memorialize it?
Yes, I did.
How did you do that?
I had Sergeant Good videotape it.
Why did you have Sergeant Good memorialize your efforts to excavate the area?
I thought someone may wonder why I decided to use a leaf blower, so I wanted to demonstrate its effectiveness.
I'm going to move to introduce two videos that counsel has.
So there's no objection to these videos, right?
No objection.
Exhibit 51.
Thank you. With the court's permission, can I show the jury the videos?
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, can we show number one, please? Ms. Gilman, stop at the end of the video so it's a still frame. That's good right there. Sir, who's the person holding the leaf blower?
That is me.
Did the leaf blower work as you had hoped?
It was great.
You see other footprints around that area?
Correct.
Do you know how those footprints got there?
Some of them were from first responders. Some of them were for witnesses. The ones up top by the flagpole were for when the officers put out the crime scene tape.
Did officers try to wrap the crime scene tape around the flagpole?
They did wrap it around the flagpole, yes.
I see. And from that vantage point, could you see the side and front yard?
Yes.
Did the side yard have any footprints or evidence that anything was dragged through the side yard?
No, not at all.
How about the front yard? Did the front yard have any evidence that anybody had walked across it or dragged anything across it?
It had one set of prints from Sergeant Lang.
Other than Sergeant Lang's footprints across the front yard, was there any other impediment?
No, not that I saw.
I'm going to ask if we could see the second video, please, Ms. Gilman. Could you stop there, please? You see the end of the leaf blower?
I do.
There's an object just below it at like 7 o'clock. Do you see that?
I do.
Did you discover something in that area?
We did.
What did you discover?
It's a cocktail glass.
Was it, did it have any damage to it?
It did.
Describe that for us.
It was broken on the top.
Could you continue the video, please, Ms. Gilman? Stop, please. There's some red spots. Is that what you identified as coagulated blood?
That is.
Below some of those spots and to the left, there's an area that's not white. It's brownish. Do you know what that is?
That's, I believe, just bare ground.
Okay. If we could finish the video, please. Okay. Thank you. Could have the lights on, please. Did you or any officer at your direction obtain and preserve that broken cocktail glass?
Yes.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm showing you two photographs. The first photograph, do you recognize what's in that photograph?
I do.
What is it?
It's a, I exposed the broken glass.
Is the broken glass depicted in that photograph?
Yeah, it is.
Is that similar or substantially the same way it appeared to you that morning?
That's exactly how it appeared, yes.
Do you know if that photograph was taken as a still image of the video or not?
I do not.
Okay. Second photograph, can you take a look at that?
That's a close-up of the cocktail glass.
Of the same photo?
It is, yes.
I'd move these two photographs into the evidence, please.
Okay. Do you want to be 52 and 52A?
Please, Your Honor.
Exhibits 52 and 52A.
Lieutenant, what was done with that cocktail glass?
It was bagged and seized as evidence.
Was it brought anywhere that morning?
It was brought back to Canton Police Headquarters.
What happens when it gets back to Canton Police Headquarters?
It gets logged into evidence, and it's assigned an evidence number. The officer types in a description of the item. In this case, it was a broken cocktail glass or broken glass. And once he hits the space bar, it automatically generates a property number for it. And I believe in this case, it was 22-18-PR. Which means 22 is the year, 2022. 18 is how many pieces of evidence that the department as a whole had collected that year so far. And PR, I believe, means property room.
Why is it assigned a particular number?
Everything is assigned a number by the computer.
You said it's brought to the evidence room. Is that a separate or a special place?
So we have two rooms. We have a temporary evidence room, and then there's a permanent evidence room. Only two people have access to the permanent evidence room.
Is there a reason why access to the evidence room is limited?
There is.
Why?
For security.
Even in a police department, the evidence room is limited as far as people who have access?
That is correct.
In the evidence room, is there an officer assigned as an evidence officer?
Not full-time. There is an assigned admin sergeant who is assigned as the evidence officer.
Does anything happen specifically with the evidence? Is it packaged or stored in any particular way?
The glass was put into a log. Put into a locker, I believe, and temporary evidence. And then it's the evidence sergeant's job to retrieve it. But in this case, we were going to transfer it to the state police.
Was it transferred to the state police at some point?
It was.
Were you part of the transition of that item to the state police?
I was.
And when was it transitioned into who?
It was on February 1st, 2022, and it was to a criminalist. From the Massachusetts State Crime Lab.
Do you know who the criminalist was?
I don't know the name, no.
Did the criminalist come to your department, or did you bring the item to them?
They came to our department.
In addition to the glass, there was plastic cups with coagulated blood?
That's correct.
What did you do with those cups?
Those were placed in temporary evidence and placed in a refrigerated unit.
To carry them from Fairview to the police department, did you hold the actual cups, or did you put them in something?
Nope, they were stacked in a bag.
What type of bag?
It was a craft paper bag. In this particular case, we utilized the Stop and Shop bag.
Is that any different than a bag from the police department?
This made of the same paper, craft paper, the same size and dimension, other than Stop and Shop and evidence and probably price. They're basically the same bag.
Why did you use one of those rather than a bag that said evidence on it?
I don't know where that bag came from. I was in a personal car. Sergeant Lank was in a Tundra. If that bag is upside down, you wouldn't know it didn't say evidence on it. So I'm not sure where that bag came from.
And the plastic cups, do you know what happened to those?
Yes, they were turned over to the criminalist as well.
Where did you store them before they were turned over to the criminals?
Temporary evidence in a refrigerator. Temporary evidence in a refrigerator.
Is the refrigerator part of the temporary evidence area?
It is, yes.
Did you bring that piece of evidence, the broken glass, with you today?
Yes.
With the court's permission, I'd like to approach the witness. Handing you a box, gloves, and some scissors. Let me ask you about that box. It has red tape on it. Why?
It's a secure for and transfer of custody.
I'm going to
Lieutenant, before you open the box, were you one of the officers that discovered that broken glass?
Yes.
Did you personally bring the glass from Fairview to Canton?
No.
Do you know who did?
Yes.
Who?
Detective Sergeant Lang.
Sergeant Lang?
Yes.
When you went back to the station, you said that the evidence was then put into an evidence locker. Did you place it in the evidence locker?
I don't recall.
And then inevitably, it was transitioned to somebody from the forensic unit?
That's correct.
Were you personally there when it was taken from the evidence locker and given to the person from the forensic unit?
Yes, that was me.
Did you have a responsibility and role in that process, or were you a passive observer?
I had an active role. I was the chain of custody. I was turning it over to the criminalist, to the state police lab.
After that glass was given to the criminalist, did you ever have possession of it again?
Never.
Did you ever package it or touch it again in any way?
No, never.
Did you ever process it in any way?
No.
Did you put it in that box and tape it up yourself?
No.
Okay. I'm going to now ask you to open the box, please. Is there an item in that bag?
There is.
Would you please open the bag and show us what's in that bag? Thank you. If you could put it back in the bag and the bag back in the box, please. Lieutenant Gallagher, does that appear to be the same item that you found in the area where John O'Keefe was at Fairview that morning?
Yes, it does.
I'd like to have the box and the item marked for identification, please.
Okay.
To the queue for ID.
Thank you. When you were looking around the area that was pointed out to you is where John O'Keefe was found, did you expand across the front lawn into the street during your search?
No, we didn't, with the exception of uncovering the six-foot asphalt berm.
Did you say 6 foot, or is it?
Excuse me, 6 inch.
What's a berm?
It's a it's basically a curbing, but it's made of asphalt. It's curved. You probably have seen it. It's asphalt. It's curved. It separates the street from property line.
Why did you clear that piece?
Wanted to see, we were trying to find out why John was having a medical issue, and we didn't know if he could have tripped over a curbing or what turned out to be an asphalt berm and possibly hit his head.
After you made efforts to look in that area, did you return to the Canton Police Department?
I did.
About what time?
It was shortly after 8 a.m.
After you returned to the Canton Police Department, did you receive any information or have a reason to return back to Fairview?
Yes.
About what time?
A little after 9 o'clock.
Why did you go back to Fairview after 9 o'clock?
Sergeant Lank got a phone call that Jen McCabe had more information.
And where did you understand Mrs. McCabe was?
At 34 Fairview.
Did you go back to 34 Fairview?
I did.
Did you go with anybody?
I went with Sergeant Lank.
Did you travel together or separate?
Together.
When you got back to 34 Fairview outside, what did you do?
We parked in the driveway. We walked up and next to the garage, there's a side door. I don't know if we rang the bell or knocked, but Brian Albert, the homeowner, answered the door.
As you walked up to the door, did you have a chance to look around at the doors in the area in front of that side door?
Yes.
Did you see anything out of place?
No.
You've been a police officer at that point for a long time?
Yes.
Do you receive any training in observing areas or people?
Always.
What type of training? What are you told to look for when you're speaking to people?
I've been BOSAR trained, which is behavioral observation, suspicious activity training. You look for clues when you're speaking to people, whether they cross their legs, cross their arms, is certain behavioral characteristics.
At this point, did you have any understanding that this would later be a crime scene?
I did, yes.
What happened? How did you come to that conclusion?
Not at that time.
Oh, not at that time.
No,
okay.
Not at that time.
When you went into the house, what part of the house did you go into?
I went into the room. It's adjacent to the kitchen, and I stood there with Brian Albert.
Can you describe what kind of room that would be?
Yeah, it was a typical family room type room. It was not large. It was between the garage and the kitchen.
You met with Brian Albert?
Brian Albert answered the door and let us into the house.
Did you understand what his relationship was to that house?
He was the homeowner.
Did Sergeant Lank walk in with you?
He did.
Did he stay in that living area?
No, he went to the kitchen area and sat down with Jen McCabe.
Could you see the kitchen area from where you were?
I could see a portion of the kitchen area.
Did you see anybody else in the kitchen area with Mrs. McCabe and Sergeant Lank?
There were people in the kitchen area. There was nobody with Sergeant Lank or Miss McCabe.
Could you hear their conversation?
No.
Were you trying to listen?
No.
Were you speaking to Mr. Albert?
I was.
Did you take the time to make observations of him?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'll allow it.
Did you take the time to make observations of him?
Yes.
Did you speak to him?
Yes.
Did he speak to you?
Yes.
Was anything about his mannerisms or affect that caused you any concern?
No, it was just a social conversation. There was nothing of concern at all.
Was there anything about it that caused you to hone in or be concerned?
No.
I'll allow that.
No.
Did you get a chance to look around that living area at the
sure.
items?
I didn't look around, or just with my eyes.
Did you get to see that area?
I did.
Did you see anything broken or looked out of place?
No, nothing.
Anything that caused you any type of concern?
Nothing.
When you looked towards the kitchen, did you see anything that looked different or suspicious in any way?
Nothing.
Was the interaction, did it cause you any alarm or concerns?
No.
After Sergeant Lank had an opportunity to speak to Mrs. McCabe and you spoke to Brian Albert, what did you do next?
We left.
Where did you go?
We went back to the police department and were informed that the state police were going to respond to the hospital and that we didn't need to respond to the hospital.
When you heard that the state police was then going to get involved in the investigation, what does Canton do when the state police takes over an investigation?
Well, it was based off of a conversation I had with my chief in the detective sergeant's office.
Was there a decision about Canton's involvement in the ongoing investigation?
There was.
What was that decision?
That we should recuse ourselves from any further investigative interviews.
And why was that?
Because our best detective, his name was Kevin Albert, and he was the brother of the homeowner. And I didn't want any potential bias, whether unconscious or subjective, to be perceived by the O'Keefe's, by the O'Keefe family.
So when the state police got involved and you had the conversation with the chief, was that the end of your efforts towards this?
It was the end of our efforts until, I helped facilitate during the search warrant on February 1st.
And so at some point, was the defendant's Lexus brought to the Canton Police Department?
It was.
Was it put in a particular area at the Canton Police Department?
It was.
What area?
The Sallyport.
What's a Sallyport?
Sallyport is where, when we have an arrest, we bring our prisoners in. It's basically a extra large garage. It has four doors. They're numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. We typically go in door 4 and pull towards door 3. Door 4 is lowered, and then prisoners are walked into the booking area, which is also secure. The exterior doors to the Sallyport can only be opened by the dispatch console.
When crime scene services came to look at the car, was that the same day, the 29th, or later time?
No, it was February 1st.
Did the Lexus remain in the Sallyport area from the 29th until February 1st?
Yes.
When representatives from the crime lab from the Massachusetts State Police came on February 1st, who provided them access to the Lexus?
I was one of the people there that was there. I don't know if I provided them direct access, but I certainly would have. And I assisted them if they needed things. That's when the chain of custody, the exchange of custody for the blood samples and the glass occurred as well.
And during their processing of the Lexus, were you there for parts of it?
I was in and out, yes, but I did not partake.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Jackson, is this video up there yours or is it the Commonwealth?
Not mine. Or is it?
All right.
Now, Your Honor.
Yes.
Mr. Gallagher, you have already established that you were at the scene on January 29th, early morning, January 29th, 2022. We've seen the video of the leaf blower, correct?
That is correct.
So you were integral to at least an initial search of the scene, which recovered the drinking glass that you've shown us, as well as some of the blood byproduct that you've shown, that you've talked about?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. You were the ranking person on scene. You've already described that.
Yes, that is correct.
There were also several other officers from Canton PD who were there with you.
Yes, there was four other officers, yes.
Can you name those other officers?
Yeah, Detective Sergeant Lank, L-A-N-K, Detective Sergeant Good, G-O-O-D-E, Officer Mullaney, M-U-L-L-A-N-E-Y, and Officer Saraf, S-A-R-A-F.
Okay. When you initially... Let me back up and ask a different question. Given the fact that you are the ranking officer, the way that it works in a police department is everybody sort of reports up the chain of command, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So they would have all reported up to you in some particular.
That's correct.
And then, of course, you report to the deputy chief, and then the deputy chief reports on up to the chief, correct?
That is correct.
You were involved in not only the exposing of some of that blood byproduct, but also exposing the glass with the leaf blower, correct?
That is correct.
You were responsible for utilizing certain equipment. You chose a leaf blower at the time, correct?
I did, yes.
There was also, I'm guessing, there was also some use of your hands and or the gloved hands with some others to recover some of the items.
Yeah, I didn't use my hands.
So. How did you get the glass into a bag?
That was Detective Sergeant Lank.
Somebody had to pick it up, right?
Correct.
That's what I mean. The use of hands to manipulate some of the evidence, correct?
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't understand that question.
That's okay.
I thought you were speaking about me.
It's probably my fault, not yours.
Nope, that's okay.
There was also some plastic cups that we've talked about. We'll talk more about those in a second. Those were utilized as well, correct?
They were, yes.
And you were responsible for the use of those as well?
Yes. It was my decision, yes.
In terms of the search of the scene, the recovery of evidence, the recovery of biological material, the use of tools to recover those biological materials, all of that rested at least ultimately at the scene on your shoulders, correct?
Yes, it did.
Isn't it true that you weren't interviewed in this case with regard to anything having to do with this case until April 3rd, 2024, correct?
Yes, we can call it an interview. It's when I met with the prosecutor, yes.
And that was about 2.5 years, nearly 2.5 years after this incident, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Michael Proctor, you know that name?
I do.
Who is Michael Proctor?
He was one of the troopers assigned to investigate the case.
As a matter of fact, he was the lead investigator for the case, correct?
I don't know if he was lead or trooper mechanic. I don't know.
As you sit here, you don't know that Michael Proctor was the lead case agent for...
I know he was one of them, yes.
Okay. Do you know that he was the lead investigator assigned to the case?
I don't. I had nothing to do with the DA's office.
Right. I know you didn't have...
I don't know how they assign their cases, counsel. I don't know what you want me to say. I can't say what I don't know.
Mr. Gallagher, I'm not asking you to. I'm just asking if...
I did not know he was lead. I knew he was one of the leads.
Okay.
I believe they do it in a tandem, but I'm not sure.
Okay. He may have had a partner, correct?
That is correct, yes.
But it's not unusual to have a lead case agent, the person who's responsible for most of the search warrant writing and the memorialization of and documentation of evidence collection and the movement of evidence and booking into evidence, things like that.
That is correct, but I don't know anything about who wrote their affidavits or who logged their evidence in. I wouldn't know that.
You're also familiar with Yuri Bukenik, correct?
I know who he is.
You're also familiar with Lieutenant Tully?
I know, yes.
They're all Massachusetts State Police officers, correct?
Yes, they all are.
Did
yes.
Michael Proctor interview you before April of 2024?
He did not.
Did Yuri Bukenik interview you before April of 2024?
No, he did not.
Did Lieutenant Tully interview you before April of 2024?
No, he did not.
Did anybody else from the Canton Police Department, your deputy chief or the chief, interview you formally about your conduct and responsibilities before April of 2024?
I don't understand that question.
Did anybody at Canton PD, separating out Massachusetts State Police,
correct.
Did you sit down at Canton PD and provide an interview with anybody at Canton PD about your conduct at the scene?
What do you mean by conduct?
Going to the scene, collecting evidence, yeah. Securing evidence, transporting evidence, booking evidence, those kinds of things. Your conduct at the scene, sir.
Yeah, I briefed my superiors, yes.
Okay, other than briefing, was there a formal report written?
No.
Or a formal interview conducted of you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Tell us when you wrote your report about what happened at the scene, memorializing what you did at the scene.
I didn't.
You didn't write a report?
About this, the scene that day at the scene?
Correct, about this investigation.
I only did the metadata report. I did not write a report at the scene.
The fact is, you never wrote any report about what happened at the scene, correct?
Correct.
You didn't memorialize that in any formal way on Canton PD letterhead to describe what you did and how you did it at the scene?
No.
Normally, when you report to a scene as a first responder, you would be expected to write a report about that, whatever that conduct is.
I'm not the supervisor, no.
What if you're the ranking person at a scene that ultimately turns into a homicide scene?
Well, we don't know it's a homicide scene at this time. We don't even know there's a crime committed at this time.
Understood.
My responsibilities are to make sure reports are written, not to necessarily write the reports myself. I'm the supervisor.
Although,
my job to make sure reports are written, evidence is logged, those types of things.
Under ordinary circumstances, you would respond to a scene as a supervisor, and you would oversee what other people are doing, what you're
supporting. That's correct.
Can I finish?
Sure.
I don't want to talk over each other.
I apologize.
You would want a supervisor oversee what your subordinate officers, whatever he or she might be doing or they might be doing, you're going to oversee that. But they're the ones actually conducting the investigation or picking up evidence or doing the interviews, writing those things of that nature.
Correct. Detective Sergeant Likes investigation, yes.
So in that circumstance, you wouldn't be expected to write a report because all of that conduct is memorialized by others subordinate to the supervisor, correct?
Correct.
But in this case, quite the opposite happened. You were the one that was in the video utilizing the leaf blower, correct?
That's correct.
You were the one that actually exposed the drinking glass, correct?
Correct, yes.
You noted the drinking glass and actually called somebody else over to take a look at it, correct?
That's correct.
You directed someone, Sergeant Lang, to pick up the drinking glass and recover it as a potential piece of evidence, correct?
That is correct.
You noted the blood or the coagulation of blood in and around that area, correct?
That is correct.
You noted where you believe the drinking glass was, in other words, what location, if there were grid coordinates, where it would be, correct?
Correct.
And you instructed others to transport that important evidence back to Canton PD to have it booked, correct?
That is correct.
You also secured the plastic containers in which to recover the blood.
That is correct.
You also directed someone to get a bag to put the plastic containers in and ultimately transport it, correct?
That is correct.
So you would agree with me, Mr. Gallagher, that in this circumstance, you were the centerpiece of the recovery of evidence and the investigation as it was at that time in that limited context. You were the centerpiece of what was happening at the scene, correct?
And I made sure it was documented by Detective Sergeant Lang.
But you didn't find it important enough to write a report yourself.
I think that's poor misrepresentation. There's a person fighting for their life. It was very important.
When you were there at the scene at what time was it, by the way?
I got there shortly after 7.
Okay. You knew that person who was fighting for his life had already been transported and was in good care, as best care we can provide at Good Samaritan Hospital, correct?
That is correct.
So certainly you're not excusing away the idea that you didn't memorialize your conduct because you were too busy fighting for someone's life. That's not what you're saying.
No, definitely not what I'm saying.
Obviously, reporting to a scene and supervising a scene is one thing, but actually gathering evidence is a whole next level. You would agree with that?
Sure.
Because, just to put a fine point on it, responding to a scene as a supervisor, you want to make sure everybody's doing their duty, but the officer or officers who, for instance, uncover, let's say it's a knife or a gun or some weapon or something like that, actually documenting and picking up that evidence and handling it in an appropriate way, that is all highly, highly technical. It's very important to get it right and memorialize it all, correct?
That is correct.
That's why you're highly trained to memorialize and report everything that you do in that regard in a report that can later be used forensically, in other words, in a courtroom setting, to recreate as best you can with as much detail as you can exactly what you did and how you did it and where it was done, correct?
Sure, yes.
Officer Lank wrote a report in this case.
Sure.
Did Officer Mullaney?
I believe he did, yes.
Did Officer Serif?
Yes.
And Officer Good? Sergeant
yes.
Good?
Yes.
But you did not?
I did not.
Who was the first officer to find any potential physical evidence at the scene, be it blood or glass?
I can't answer that. It was not me. I was not the... The first thing that was spotted was the pink spotting, not the glass.
Okay. Who was the first person to see the glass?
I think it was myself as I uncovered it with the leaf blower.
One of the important things that we've talked about, Mr. Gallagher, is documenting the details of evidence recovery, not just the fact that something was recovered, correct?
That's correct.
So you'd want to know what time of day it was recovered, correct?
Sure.
You'd want to know who was there and who was around when it was recovered, correct?
Yes.
You'd want to know what the item is, the condition of the item, right?
Yes.
You'd also want to know exactly where it's recovered, correct?
Yes.
In other words, as best you can to pinpoint the exact location where an item was found. That
yes.
could play a huge role in any investigation, be it criminal or otherwise.
It could. It could.
Did you diagram or draw a diagram back at Canton PD or
I did
out
not.
At the scene?
No.
About where that glass was found?
No, I did no reports or diagrams.
Did you diagram exactly where you recovered the blood spots that you did recover?
No.
Did you at least, if you did write a report, did you at least take notes on a pad about what you were doing?
Yeah, conditions weren't, it was pretty hard to take notes at that time, but I did not take notes, no.
At some point, you mentioned a person by the name of Tom Kelleher, Deputy Chief Kelleher.
That's correct.
Who is Deputy Chief Kelleher?
He's the Deputy Chief of Canton Police.
He was active on active duty at the time? When I say active duty, I don't mean that morning, that hour. I mean just generally.
Yes, he was a lieutenant at that time.
He was someone to whom, as a matter of fact, probably the only person to whom at Canton PD you actually reported, correct? Up the chain of command. He was the only person to whom you reported up the chain of command, meaning he was your direct report.
He was in charge of detectives at that time. Yes.
And then, of course, the chief would be above him, correct?
Deputy chief and chief.
Okay. When you responded to the scene, Deputy Chief Kelleher did not come out of his house and take over the investigation, correct?
Correct.
That was yours to detail.
That is correct.
At least while you were there.
That is correct.
So can you describe what you did to preserve the crime scene? I'm sorry, to preserve the scene, because at that time you said you did not know if it was a crime scene. Is that right?
That's correct.
What did you do in terms of actually preserving the scene for later investigation? What steps did you take?
For later? Can you explain later investigation?
So let me take a step back.
Sure.
Have you been trained to preserve scenes?
Yes.
Okay. What's the reason that you want to preserve a scene? What does that mean?
We collect evidence.
Collect evidence and yep. make sure nothing is disturbed, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Civilians can't kind of traipse through or walk through evidence, correct?
That's correct.
You've heard the phrase forensically, evidence in, evidence out. Someone traipses through a crime scene, you bring correct. Evidence with you, and you take it back out. It's on your shoes or on your feet or your breath or your
saliva, whatever it might be.
Very familiar with that, yes.
Preserving the scene is best efforts, is best practices to make sure that nothing is moved, touched, messed with in any way, correct?
That's correct, and that's what was done here.
What did you do? That's my question. What did you do to preserve that scene?
So there was nobody, there were no civilians ever to trample through. Were rescue efforts made on Mr. O'Keefe? Yes, that's priority. So rescue workers do go into any type of scene. Medical life-saving measures come first. Once all apparatus was off scene, the original officers put out crime scene tape to mark an area. And later, it was documented, it was photographed, and evidence was collected.
And it was searched by you, at least initially with the leaf blower.
Correct.
Okay. So you were interested in the area that, by the way, I want to clear this up, make sure I'm not mistaken. You described for Mr. Brennan basically where Mr. O'Keefe's body was, correct?
Yes, yes.
You never saw his body in situ. You never saw his body in place.
That is correct.
You were told by Sergeant Lank generally where his body was, correct?
Yes, and Sergeant Lank actually never saw Mr. O'Keefe either.
That's my next question.
Okay, and Mr. Good, and Sergeant Good as well.
Right. Never saw, Sergeant Lank never saw John O'Keefe actually in place, correct?
That is correct.
So you're receiving information from Sergeant Lank that he did not have personal knowledge of, and then you're providing that information later to crime scene investigators who are trying to establish a diagram or some sort of a chart about where that evidence was, where the drinking glass was, where his body was, correct?
No, I never spoke to anybody in that manner about that.
Didn't you ultimately go out to the scene along with others at Massachusetts State Police when they had a drone overhead?
No, you're mistaken. I can clarify it for you if you wish.
Sure.
So on February 1st, after the execution of the warrant, they wanted to go down to the scene. It was Trooper Proctor and somebody from the CARS team. I'm not sure of the name. Once they got down there, I did show them where I was shown John O'Keefe was. They did want to put up a drone, but they could not do it because they were too close to Norwood Airport and because of FAA regulations.
Okay.
And that was the last of my involvement.
Okay.
With that. I hope that clarifies things for you.
Forget the drone. I'm interested in the first part, which was you accompanied Trooper Proctor to
correct.
The scene, correct?
Correct.
There were other members of CARS, C-A-R-S.
I think there was one. Crash accident reconstruction section, I'm assuming.
Okay, so it's a forensic, a member of MSP who does forensic diagrams, correct?
I would say. I don't know if they do diagrams. I don't know what they do.
Or a reconstruction of some sort.
Sure, reconstruction of some sort.
So you were there to help provide information about where Mr. O'Keefe's body was found, correct?
And be a Canton police officer present in case any neighbors had come out.
So you were there to help provide information about, or at least you did provide information to them about where Mr. O'Keefe's body was found.
Oh, sure, yes.
Except you didn't see Mr. O'Keefe's body, did you?
No, I did not.
So that was a yes on your part.
It was what I was shown. It's the information I had.
Yeah, it was the information you were told by Sergeant Lang, correct?
Yes.
Who also didn't see John O'Keefe in place on the ground at 34 Ferry, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So his would be a yes also, correct?
Well, we're going backwards, so he was told by Sergeant Good and et cetera. So it was information passed along, which is what police officers do.
Right. But the police officer that was out there at the scene, who was helping the reconstructionist establish the formal report and the CARS report, was an officer who not only didn't see where John McKee's body was, you got information about where John's body was from someone who didn't see it either. Can we at least agree
no,
on that?
You have to go back to the beginning. I didn't understand the beginning of that question.
Sure,
so very
I'll
long.
Try again. The point is, Mr. Gallagher, you happen to be tapped as the person who is going to assist the CARS folks, the MSP, in creating their CARS, their CARS report.
No.
Isn't it true that you accompanied Trooper Proctor and members of the CARS unit to document Fairview Road and the scene of the incident?
Yeah, I thought I explained it could not be done.
Okay.
So I wasn't, I only went to show them where Mr. O'Keefe was and in case any neighbors came out. I wasn't there to assist in any documentation at all.
You were there? You know who Brian Tully is?
I do.
Have you reviewed Brian Tully's report?
I have not. You showed me one section of it.
Is it true that what you actually told Brian Tully is that you went with Trooper Proctor and you're already shaking your head now? I didn't finish the question.
No.
I got that part wrong? You accompanied Trooper Proctor?
No, what's wrong is I was interviewed by Lieutenant Tully. That was a meeting I had with Prosecutor Lally.
Okay.
Trooper Tully was present. Trooper Tully never asked me any questions. I don't recall Trooper Tully ever asking me a question, sir.
So let me be a little bit more defined. So in Trooper Tully's report, where he reports what you said, you were actually talking to Adam Lally, my colleague sitting up in front.
Correct.
Okay. So now we've got that cleared up. Let me ask you again. Did you say in front of Trooper Tully that you accompanied Trooper Proctor and members of the CARS unit to document Fairview Road?
Meaning they were documenting Fairview Road. Not clear. The report's not clear. They were going to document Fairview Road, not me.
So you just said something that I want to follow up on.
Okay.
The report's not clear, correct?
That's correct.
So that's an inaccurate report.
I wouldn't call it inaccurate at all. I'm just saying you're misinterpreting the wording.
I see. And I'm misinterpreting it even though I just read it directly from the report.
Yeah, sometimes sentences have different meanings.
Okay.
Yes, you are.
Okay. The reality is you did end up going to the scene, correct?
I did.
And you accompanied, I don't want to use a word that you'll challenge, you went with Trooper Proctor, correct?
I took my cruise into 34 Fairview, yes.
You were there at the same time Trooper Proctor was?
Yes.
And you were aware that the CARS team was there so that they could document the scene, correct?
I don't know what the purpose of the drone was. I'm not familiar with that section. I thought I answered that question. I'm not familiar with what they do.
But you do believe that, as you sit here, you were there, we weren't. You
right.
do believe that that's the reason that they were there, was to document the scene.
Put up a drone.
Okay.
I don't know what you mean by document. I don't know if it was to photograph, I guess, which if you mean by document photograph, I guess it could. I would agree. If it means take measurements, I wouldn't know.
Okay. Did you tell any of the members of the CARS team where you believed John's body was?
I believe it was Trooper Proctor, but I believe he was there, yes.
Trooper Proctor obviously was not there when John's body was there either, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So he would have gotten that information
from you. That is correct.
So now that's three people.
It's probably more, quite honestly, yeah.
Well, I'm just talking about this report.
Correct.
The CARS report. That's three people in line. None of them saw John O'Keefe's body as it lay in the lawn when he was hurt.
That is correct, yes.
And there's no photographs?
Of
Mr. O'Keefe?
Oh, no.
At the location?
No, we wouldn't. Nobody would photograph somebody undergoing life-saving measures. Wouldn't be appropriate.
There's no video, specifically.
They wouldn't take video of somebody undergoing life-saving measurements.
There's
either.
No body cam.
We don't have body cameras.
There's no dash cam that shows it.
Well, dash cameras would be on the road. Mr. O'Keefe was approximately 8 to 10 feet off the road.
Well, hang on a second. You're not sure where Mr. O'Keefe was because you never saw him.
That's why I used a range, yes.
Right.
I know where the blood was. I know where the glass was.
Right. You don't know if he was 7 to 9 feet off.
That's correct.
Or 12 feet off. You can't say.
I could only approximately. You are correct, yes.
You did meet with Officer Serif. You met with all the officers when you arrived at the scene, correct?
Yes.
And Officer Serif had been there from the beginning of the morning?
Yes.
Officer Serif didn't report to you at that time any statements attributable to my client, did he?
He did not, no.
You later went back to 34 Fairview with Sergeant Lank.
That's correct.
And you rode back. Did you ride back to Canton PD with Sergeant Lank or separate cruisers?
Which time? I apologize.
I'm sorry. That's a vague question on my part. You went back to 34 Fairview with just Officer Lank, and you described a circumstance in which you went in, you were let in by Brian Albert. He went to the kitchen. You were in the family room or some other place?
Right by the kitchen, yeah.
Right by the room kitchen.
Off the kitchen, yes.
Okay, so right next to where he was interviewing...
That's correct.
Jennifer McCabe.
Yes.
Did you ride back from that meeting with, or that event to Canton PD with Sergeant Lank?
Yes.
And Sergeant Lank didn't say anything to you about his interview with Jennifer McCabe at that time?
I don't recall our conversation on the way back.
Okay. And you didn't write a report about any conversation that you had with Officer Seraph? You didn't write a report about any conversation you had with Sergeant Lank?
No, they're responsible for writing their own reports.
Got it. You did say that... Let me back up and ask a different question. You testified about a year ago in another proceeding. You talked a little bit about the evidence collection of the biological material, the blood, or as I'm guessing at that time, presumed blood. You haven't done any testing.
That's correct, yes, sir.
But you assumed it was blood just because of your experience and it looked like it could be blood on the street.
That's correct.
How far were you from Canton PD, approximately?
Mile and a half.
Mile and a half. You had your cruiser with you?
I had my personal vehicle with me.
Your personal vehicle. In other words, your ambulance where you could get from point A to point B if you wanted to.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I was the scene supervisor. I wasn't leaving the scene.
Okay. But you also had subordinate folks at the scene that you could have dispatched had you wanted to.
Correct.
They all had cruisers?
Yes, they did.
Or personal vehicles. I'm not sure which.
I'm sorry?
Or personal vehicles. I'm not sure which.
I was the only one with a personal vehicle. Detective Sergeant Lank had a Toyota Tundra pickup truck that is not marked, but it's assigned to our detective unit.
So if you wished to, as a ranking officer out of the scene, you could have dispatched one or more of those officers to run an errand to go do something in furtherance of the investigation had you wanted to?
Yeah, I actually did that.
Okay, you did. What did
yes.
you do in that regard?
Remember, I sent Sergeant Good to get the leaf blow.
Got it. You also know that Canton PD has evidence collection bags at Canton PD.
Yes.
You also know that they have materials and tools to gather biological material, correct?
We do have swabs, yes.
And those swabs go in little containers to maintain their sanitary nature, correct?
That is correct, yes.
In other words, if you see a blood stain, you don't just walk up with a Kleenex that you find on the ground and wipe it up. There's your blood stain. There's a process for gathering that type of evidence, correct?
Sure. If you're looking for DNA, you can use a bloody Kleenex, to your point.
It'd be kind of an emergency.
Yeah, absolutely. My point exactly.
But if you're a mile from the Canton PD,
yeah.
You could have gone back and done a swab.
Could have.
But you didn't.
Didn't want to because of the weather, because you just said because it's an emergency, and we thought it was an emergency there. I mean, the storm was coming down terribly. And I believe if we didn't collect that biological matter, we weren't going to get that biological matter.
But Canton PD was a mile and a half away, four or five minutes.
In a blizzard?
Still, in a blizzard, I feel like it's 3 minutes in good weather, probably 4, 5, 6 minutes in a blizzard, correct?
I'm not sure.
So let's call it 12, 15 minutes. You certainly could have gone back. If you wanted to, you could have dispatched one of your officers to go back and get swabs and properly collect the blood material. Correct?
Sure. And I believed 15 minutes would have made a difference.
And what you did instead is, 15 minutes would have made a difference, but you asked Sergeant Good to drive to his house and get a leaf blower.
Yes, and while he was doing that, we were documenting the scene with photographs.
You could have documented the scene with photographs even if you went back and get a swab. What's the difference?
Because we were ongoing. It was ongoing. I wasn't leaving the scene.
I didn't ask you to leave the scene. I mean, I didn't ask if you were leaving the scene.
I needed the other officers. We talked about scene security. I already let one officer go. I now have three left. We're securing that scene.
So you saw pink stains in the snow, correct?
That's correct.
And you said, Officer Good, probably call him Sean, Sarge, go home and get a leaf blower.
That is correct.
Could have said, Officer Mulaney, get your butt over to Canton PD and pick up 10 swabs, correct?
He wouldn't have had access to the swabs.
Oh, so now one of your officers could have gotten swabs, even if the lieutenant, a ranking lieutenant, had dispatched him to go get a swab.
Because he doesn't have access to the BCI, the office of BCI, where our stuff is kept.
Could you have made a phone call?
No, nobody there would have had access at that time. It was only Officer Dever on the desk.
So you're the only person that could have gotten those swabs?
Sergeant Lang could have gotten them as well.
So Sergeant Lang could have too?
Sure.
But you didn't send them?
No, definitely didn't.
Okay. What you did do, however, is you went to the neighbor's house. That would be Tom Kellett, right?
The lieutenant of detectives, yes.
Right. And Lieutenant Kelleher gave you red Solo cups.
Yes. I asked for plastic or glass containers. He had Solo cups, and I utilized them.
The same kind of Solo cups that we all see at backyard barbecues.
Yep, they hold liquid terrifically.
They're also not sealed, correct?
They are not.
They're also not used normally. I mean, they were here. They're not normally used for evidence collection, correct?
Oh, absolutely not.
And then you decided you needed to transport that very important biological material back to Canton PD for storage and safety, correct?
That's correct.
And why was it important to transport that blood material? So what are the factors that you considered the weight and balance in terms of getting that material back to Canton PD in good condition, sanitary condition?
So a criminalist could extract a proper DNA sample.
What would happen, for instance, if that blood material, I don't know, were contaminated?
Contaminated how?
You tell me. You're the professional.
So DNA is pretty hardy, pretty forensically stable. The only things that are going to harm it are radiation, ultraviolet light, harsh chemicals such as bleach. That's not present here. Then you would have two sets of DNA when it's tested, which would benefit you.
Well, depends on whose DNA it is.
That's correct. Right. That's correct.
Right. Yes. While you were, I'm going to stay on this for a second. So obviously there's a reason why blood swabs or biological swabs are handled with such care. For instance, a DNA analyst is going to put on gloves.
Correct.
Oftentimes they're going to put on a mask, right?
I don't know about that.
Oftentimes they put on goggles, is that right?
It depends what they're testing.
Right.
Yeah.
But in order to go out and collect something, you'll see CSI, crime scene investigators, in full body suits when they
sure.
walk into a crime scene.
Yeah, you can.
Because you don't want to contaminate the scene with your own hair off your arm or an eyelash falling into a blood stain, correct?
That is correct.
Right. So there are protocols. I mean, you said just a second ago, Scouter, well, it's DNA. Unless somebody pours bleach in it, you're pretty much golden, right? That's not quite the fact, is it?
And that's not quite what I said.
No, it's not quite what you said. You were suggesting that it's hardy enough that it doesn't really matter.
No.
It's contaminated or not. If there's multiple people's DNA, it just benefits everybody.
No, I simply asked what you meant by contamination.
Okay. So it could be contaminated with debris, is that right?
Sure, it can.
It could be contaminated with other people's DNA, is that right?
It can.
It could be contaminated with foreign items, foreign either aerosols or somebody's spittle when they're talking, correct?
Sure.
With a thousand things.
Hypothetically.
Right. Of course, these Solo cups didn't have lids on them, right?
They did not.
They were open?
Yes.
You didn't photograph where you picked up the samples?
No.
You didn't document where you picked up the samples?
No.
So if the samples were in six, how many Solo cups were there?
Six.
Six Solo cups. We don't know as we sit here where each of those Solo cups' contents came from specifically, do we?
Specifically, no.
Okay. Then those Solo cups with no lids were placed into a bag, right?
That's correct.
You said on direct examination that this was a brown paper bag, right?
It is. Stop and Shop, I believe.
And you said that Stop and Shop bag is, other than having the words Stop and Shop on it versus evidence on it, basically the one and the same thing.
Same dimensions, made out of the same materials, yes.
Right. But with an evidence bag, you know exactly where it came from and who's handling it.
Not necessarily.
Comes from a manufacturer
sure.
whose job it is to secure those bags so that they are not mishandled, so they can have some sort of bona fides that they're clean and ready to accept evidence. In, say, for instance, I don't know, the investigation of a homicide of a police officer. Okay. Important stuff, right?
We're not at a homicide of a police officer at this point.
I'm just talking about evidence bags in general. Evidence bags in general. In other words, I'm trying to think about some of the most important investigations around. The manufacturers of those evidence bags manufacture them and send them in a way so that their bona fides, the provenance of those bags, is maintained, correct, and protected.
That's the way they ship them, yes.
Right. And Kenton PD pays extra money for those bags for that very purpose.
I'm sure they do, yes.
You mentioned almost tongue-in-cheek. Look, except for the price, yeah, they're probably pretty close.
Yes.
There's a reason that there's a price difference, right?
What would the reason? What's the reason?
Well, it's not the shelf. I can go pay 10 cents.
Yeah.
But that bag is not really good. Who's? Where it's been, or who's handling it. Right? It's got my milk and my eggs in it. Really don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they price it, because of how they package it. I don't have any knowledge
of
that.
Well, you're the one that mentioned the price.
No. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I'm sorry. We're speaking over each other. Okay.
I apologize.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gallagher. You got to wait for me.
Yep.
There's a reason. My point is, there's a reason. Right?
Yes.
The evidence bags are more expensive because there is a way they're manufactured and they're taken care of, and Canton PD is willing to pay that extra price like every other law enforcement agency because of that. Correct?
Yes.
All right. So they're not quite the same, are they?
No.
Those Solo cups were placed in the evidence bag uncovered.
Yes.
The evidence bag was then placed in Sergeant Lank's vehicle?
It was closed, and Sergeant Lank transported it to his vehicle, yes.
Okay. When you say closed, you mean the top of it was rolled up?
Correct.
Or folded over?
Correct.
Okay. It wasn't forensically sealed?
Not at that time, no.
There was no evidence tape that went on it?
Not at that time, no.
Matter of fact, the cups were still open and could slosh around? Assume they melted?
Yes.
There's liquid blood and liquid water, like
that's correct.
Snow.
That's correct.
And you indicated that those were, at least you believe, those were placed in an evidence locker, temporary evidence locker, correct?
No, the blood samples were put in a refrigerated unit.
My mistake. I thought the refrigerator was the temporary storage locker. It's different?
Yes, lockers are not refrigerated. That's where the glass would go into a locker.
Okay. This was placed into an evidence refrigerator.
That's correct.
That was to maintain the integrity of the sample, the biological sample, inside the cups, correct?
That's correct.
Do you have an evidence log of that?
I don't, no.
You've never seen an evidence log indicating that those were actually put into a refrigerated evidence locker?
I removed them myself, so I know they were in the refrigerated unit.
When did you remove them?
On February 1st.
Right. We're talking about January 29th. They were taken to Canton PD by Officer Lang, Sergeant Lang, on January 29th. I'm just asking, well, let me ask a foundational question. Does Canton PD maintain something called evidence logs?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not the evidence officer.
No.
There is. It's all computerized.
Right.
So, like I explained earlier, when they do get logged in, the officer puts the description of the property, hits the space bar, and the computer generates an evidence number.
Right. And that evidence number is associated with just that piece of evidence?
Just that piece of evidence, correct.
And every time it's checked out or put back in, there is a log created, correct?
It's they do it by computer, yes.
It's a digital fingerprint?
Correct.
All right. I mean, you're a former narco specialist, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did narcotics for years, right?
I did.
Drugs, about the most sensitive thing out there, right? I mean, you get a bottle of fentanyl, you're not just going to set it on the...
Of course.
Evidence subject's desk, you're going to make sure that damn thing gets logged exactly how it's supposed to, correct?
Of course.
Because it needs to have a trace of where it goes and who touches it and who has access to it, correct?
That is correct.
You've never seen an evidence log for these items that were taken from 34 Fairview and supposedly put into the, well, not supposedly, because you took them out, and ultimately went into a refrigerated evidence locker.
Yeah, I wouldn't have access to the evidence log. It's a very, our evidence room is a very strict process. There's only two people that can even have access to the permanent, once it goes into permanent evidence. And it's the admin sergeant that, that changes the custody when it comes out for court, if an item has to come out for court, or if it has to be transported to another agency, or if an officer needs it removed from evidence for further inspection. The admin sergeant would take care of that.
That's the way it's...
Ms. Jackson, you're not going to finish today, right?
No, I'm
in
not.
Two minutes.
Two questions, and I'm also...
All right, two questions.
Thank you. That's the way it's supposed to work, correct?
Yes.
But you've never, as you sit here, you've never seen an evidence log determining where that blood went and who was handling it between January 29th and February 1st.
I have never seen an evidence log.
That's all I had, Your Honor, at least at this time.
All right, Lieutenant, we're going to have you come back tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
The jury files that you can file right now.
Thank you.
So, jurors, that's it for today. The same three, four cautions. Please do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into this case. If you happen to see, hear, read anything about it, please disregard it and let us know tomorrow and be very careful with your social media use. All right, see you tomorrow.
All rise for the court, please. Jurors, close your notebooks, follow me.
Goodbye.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
So they said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. That's Daly. Moto Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another. Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces. If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
Whoa, John, what are you playing?
I only spin on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players. Free coins every single day. That's Daly. Moto Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another. If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto.us.
Visit Modo.us for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Moto offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games and now introducing live blackjack, roulette, and casino hold'em. These are so much fun. Moto always has generous jackpots, free spins, and exciting promotions. Register today at Modo.us for your free welcome bonus.
Moto is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
Modo.us.
Modo.us.
is.
Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games with free spins, exciting promotions, and always generous jackpots. You can waste your time with the others, or you can win at Modo. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US. MODO.US.
Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games and now introducing live blackjack, roulette, and casino hold'em. These are so much fun. Modo always has generous jackpots, free spins, and exciting promotions. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US.
Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
I only spend on Modo, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Modo, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Modo Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. That's Daly. Modo Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another. Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces. If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Modo Casino.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Modo.us.
Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games with free spins, exciting promotions, and always generous jackpots. You can waste your time with the others, or you can win at Modo. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
Modo.us.